and welcome to Will You Still Love It Tomorrow? I'm Annie.
And I'm Dave. Each month we take it in turns to nominate a film, TV show or book we were a fan of before we were married and the other one doesn't really know.
Then we both watch or read it and come together to discuss our reactions. Fair warning, there will be spoilers.
So today, we're doing the 1998 J.J. Abrams TV show Felicity. Are you impressed I managed to pronounce his name properly?
I am, because you pretty much always get it wrong, so well done. Well done, you.
Why did you pick this show?
Did you not figure it out?
So, the lead character is played by, I don't have any of the actresses' names,
Kerry Russell,
who is currently leading on a show that we really like.
Yes, The Diplomat.
She doesn't seem to have done an awful lot in between.
Oh, okay.
I mean, yes, various things, but nothing that was, you know, big.
But did you recognise her?
God, no. There's absolutely no way I'd have recognised her.
Did you recognise her after you looked it up?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could tell it was her.
She's very different.
I could tell it was her once I'd had it pointed out to me, effectively.
Yeah.
But no.
It turns out there's all sorts of people in this, but we will come to that.
I'm sure. So, yes, why did you pick it?
Because of that.
Oh, literally because of that?
Yeah, because we were watching The Diplomat, and I recognised her. We saw the second season of The Diplomat very recently, and I recognised her name in the credits and remembered this show. And so, thought, that would be a fun one to do.
So the question is, which show is sillier?
Well, they're silly in very different ways.
Very different ways.
It's not a lot of running around and shooting and getting blown up in Felicity. There's not quite so much desperately painful navel gazing in The Diplomat.
Yes, there is.
Well, fair. So probably The Diplomat.
Yes, fair enough.
What did you think? Dare I ask? I'm so sorry.
So the main thing that I would do with this show is really damn it by faint praise, in as much as for what it is, there's absolutely nothing wrong with it. There's just an awful lot of what it is.
Okay.
There's an awful lot of essentially teenage melodrama shows.
Yes, that is true.
And I haven't watched many of them at all, but it doesn't feel like there's anything about this particular teenage melodrama show that made it stand out in any way that different from any of the other ones.
I would say that's probably fair.
So that was my main thing. I'm not really sure who it's trying to aim at. Teenage girls?
Oh, definitely me from quite a few years ago.
Because it overlaps with, we'll come on to facts in a bit, but it overlaps with things like Dawson's Creek, which, you know, I'm sure
really?
Was...
Really?
Yeah.
I thought this was way later than Dawson's Creek. No. No, you're right, actually.
No.
That's a fair point. I think the reason I think that is because I was watching Dawson's Creek at the time that it was on, and this I didn't discover until quite a long time after it was over.
Oh, and then went and watched it all.
Yes.
Oh, okay. Interesting. I'm intrigued as to how you were suckered in as an older woman.
I mean, not that much older, but a little bit.
Fair enough. How did it hold up for you overall?
Pretty badly, if I'm honest.
Okay.
I thought it was fairly terrible, but I do absolutely know why I loved it when I watched it, which can't have been much past the time when it was on, because the characters go to college pretty much the same time as me. It's a year later than I did. And I have known these people. I have been these people. Some of the parallels are quite marked.
Okay.
And yeah, so I related very, very hard to quite a lot of what was going on.
Did you also make terrible life choices? I'm sure you did.
I mean, sure. The question for this podcast episode is, how many desperately humiliating teenage bad decisions do you want in terms of confessions from me in this episode?
I mean, there was the half-naked boy in the wardrobe.
Oh, God, I didn't even think about that. That does not relate to Felicity. Let's move on. Do you want to give a brief plot synopsis for anybody who... Well, I mean, a concept, I guess. Premise?
So, Felicity Porter is a bright young high school student with a promising career laid out before her, although her life is very much overly organised. Instead, she decides, rather than go to Stanford to pursue a medical degree, as her parents have intended her to do, she instead decides to follow a boy to New York to go to college to do she doesn't even really know what.
Yeah, very true. That was a good premise. Mm-hmm. Summary. I've always been very jealous of the American college system where you can just rock up and have a year to do whatever you want and figure out your plan later. I've always thought that seemed very appealing.
So I feel that I must express a thing before we even get to facts.
Okay.
Which is the absolutely staggering level of privilege in this show.
Oh, massively. Oh, yes.
Because the idea that you could just say, you know what, I'm just going to go off to college for X number of years and I don't even know what I'm going to do, and I'm going to just, you know, pick a random college and I'm sure they'll let me in because I'm great.
And assume it will just all work out, which it does.
And, you know, money isn't a problem and, you know, everything else isn't a problem. Anyway.
Yes, agreed. We will no doubt get
to all this. Do you want to do some facts? I have a few, but you can crack on.
I don't know whether I have any facts. It ran from 1998 for four seasons, so it covers the whole of Felicity's college career. It won a fair few awards.
It did.
Emmys, Golden Globes, People's Choice, Teen Choice.
Mm-hmm.
Got a lot of nominations. Mm-hmm. Oh, and there was a weird thing about the hair. Do you want to
Shall I do facts from the top?
Sure. Go on.
So it came out in 1998, so it came out at the same time as Dawson's Creek, which I've never seen, and Party of Five, which
my parents are actually watching at the moment.
Which I watched a lot of
at one point in time.
I think I watched like the first three or four seasons when it came out. Okay. So I was suckered into that one. Did the premise of that one?
Not really.
Five children in a family, oldest one is like 18, I think, and is about to go to college. Both their parents die in a car crash, and suddenly the eldest two have to essentially look after the other ones rather than doing what they were going to do.
That is darker than I was expecting.
Yeah, it's got some
really
good
Dawson's Creek really start in 1998?
I don't know when it started. It happened to be on concurrently at the same time as this.
I find that very difficult.
I've never seen it. So this
It's on the list, but after this, I might delete it. Yeah.
So I thought J.J. Abrams was going to be known for a lot more things because his profile is so high that it turns out he's actually done. He did Armageddon, he did the new Star Trek reboot in 2009, he did The Force Awakens. Those are the main film things. He's talked about as this amazing film director.
Yeah.
And yet he hasn't really done all that much that's very high profile. On television, he did Fringe, which was a kind of X-Files thing. He did Person of Interest that I know you really like.
Yeah, they're both pretty big shows.
Yeah. I mean, his profile is much higher for TV than the film.
Yeah, yeah.
Fringe, Person of Interest, and then Almost Human, which is a science fiction show we both like that was cut off in its prime.
Mm.
That was a real shame.
Yeah, so this is quite a departure. I mean, this was earlier than all of this.
This
was his first show.
Yeah. First or second, I can't remember.
I think it's the only thing he's done that's wholly, you know, real world, no powers, weirdness, fantasy, sci-fi elements, which is interesting. And this is so incredibly real world.
So talking of real world, except not at all, except exactly the opposite, it's produced by, along with J.J. Abrams, a guy called Matt Reeves, who did Clover...
The extra syllable just slipped in there.
Yeah. Who did Cloverfield,
yeah.
Planet of the Apes,
mm.
The Batman, that's one of the Batman reboots, and the current Penguin TV series, which is very, very popular.
Yeah, so they're both very much superhero, supernatural, sci-fi nerds.
It was executive produced by a guy called Brian Glazer, who did Apollo 13 and Frost Nixon. I really like Frost Nixon.
Yes, very good film.
And Ron Howard, later of Happy Days, but also Backdraft Apollo 13. Lots of other things.
Okay.
Right. Kerry Russell.
Yes.
As Felicity.
Yes.
Has done lots of random stuff that's not really been very popular. This, a show called The Americans, which I've never heard of.
You've never heard of The Americans?
No.
Oh, God, that was massive when it was on.
Oh, what was it about?
Yeah, I watched first season. It's about a Russian sleeper unit.
Oh, so a couple okay.
who are married. I understand. They're Russian agents.
I understand the premise, but I've not heard of the show.
Yeah, I watched a bit of it. It didn't really appeal to me.
And then The Diplomat. We've got Amy Jo Johnson playing
who
Julie.
I absolutely recognised as Jules from Flashpoint.
Jules from Flashpoint.
We love Flashpoint.
Flashpoint was excellent.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Scott Speedman. What a great name.
Okay.
He is
I
Ben.
I don't think I know him from anything else.
He was apparently one of the main people in the Underworld films, the early ones.
Oh, okay.
And
the
then,
ones with Kate Beckinsale?
Mm, yes.
I only really remember Kate Beckinsale in the PVC, to be
well,
honest.
Well, you would. And then Grey's Anatomy was his thing for quite a while.
Yeah, okay. Yes, I watched far more of that than I wish I had.
I'm kind of reminded of Joey from Friends, how everybody eventually manages to get onto a TV hospital site. If you're an actor long enough, you get on there eventually because they run out of all the other people to get into. Scott Foley is Ben, who is best known for being in...
Noel.
Sorry, best known as Noel, who's best known for being in a lot of the Scream films.
Oh, really? Well, I know him from Scandal, because he was in 104 episodes of Scandal. He's one of the main guys from that.
Okay. Also,
we didn't get that far in that, but that's
also,
where I know him from.
Also, apparently, Dawson's Creek.
And yeah, you said that, and I don't... Yeah.
And House.
Seems weird. Okay. Well, I watched all of both of those, so I must have seen him in them.
I've watched a lot of clips of House, which have led me to believe that I like clips from the show and really wouldn't want to watch the whole thing.
No, don't go there, really.
We have, as you mentioned, a whole entry in Wikipedia called Hairstyle Change.
Yes.
Which is...
So Felicity, in the start of the show, has the most incredible nimbus of...
Big hair.
Beautifully curly hair that is, like, the most... distinctive thing about her, because her character is not really very distinctive at all, but the hair is a character in and of itself, I would say. And apparently at one point when they were on hiatus, sent a picture of herself to the showrunners wearing a short wig, and they all lost their minds, and then kind of came round to the idea and then decided that they would actually cut all her hair off. And the show also lost ratings, and there was this kind of story going around that it was the haircut that had caused the loss of ratings, which was not actually, you know, correlation and causation and all of that, because the ratings had actually dropped off before it happened. But I mean, I don't remember her having short hair later in the show, and I am obsessed with the hair.
But it is just, you know... People are not talking about the plot, so they're not talking about this. They're talking about...
The lead actress's hair.
Specifically about a young woman's hair.
Yes, but if you think about it, that is mentioned, that is quite a theme in The Diplomat, because she is a very high-powered official. She's the US ambassador to the UK.
Yeah.
And yet, the amount of time other characters... spend talking about her hair
and what she's wearing. Yeah,
I mean, it does happen.
Well,
and it's quite amusing because her hair is much more controlled in The Diplomat than it is in early seasons of Felicity.
Well, it's also referred to in The West Wing, because CJ gets an awful lot of, you know, yes, you may be representing, you know, the most powerful man in the world at the podium, but you know whose shoes you're wearing.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's just,
I mean, it is a thing.
It's grim,
sadly.
You mentioned briefly awards. So it won in 1999. It won the Golden Globe Best Actress Drama Series, People's Choice Award Best Drama, Primetime Emmy Award for Cinematography.
Yeah,
which was really interesting.
No lens flares, which is what J.J. Abrams is most known for. I was looking out just in case.
Teen Choice, Best Breakout Actress. And in Rotten Tomatoes, it's got 71%, and in Metacritic, it's got 87%. So.
Wow, okay.
Yep.
Fair enough.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was terrible. And then I was looking up various things, and it reminded me of things that happened later in the series, and I was like, oh God, no, I don't want to carry on watching this. Yeah, I think it went somewhat off the rails towards the end, but anyway.
Oh, we can talk about the ending. I have a note about the ending.
Oh, do you? Okay, fair enough.
I looked it up.
So
do you want to know what my first comment is on the very top of my notes?
I don't know, do I?
It says, this show is so white and sexy.
Okay.
By which I mean there is essentially one non-white character.
Ah, well.
And all of the people are really attractive. classically attractive.
Yeah, yeah. Oh yeah, well, I mean, it's a 90s college show.
So do you know...
Of course it's going to be like that. But there is, I'm going to say it now, I was going to, you know, save it for later, but interestingly, the character that I remember most is Elena, who is the admittedly only black member, regular member of the cast, and there were 84 episodes of this show across the four seasons, and she is in 82 of them, which is all of them apart from the two we watched. So she turns up in episode 3, and then she's in it all the way through, and she was my favourite character.
Okay, so we've managed to watch totally non-representative thing of the right.
Yeah, pretty much, because we watched the first two episodes of season one, because it's not an episodic show, it's an arc show.
Oh, so yeah, yeah,
you, you know, it wouldn't have worked if we'd watched later episodes.
Yeah.
But yes, it was a bit of a shame. I was like, I'm sure there was someone, and I was like, okay, yes, but she doesn't turn up until episode 3.
You hate this kind of thing, but what is another contemporary, I haven't looked at the dates, but roughly the same amount of time, college-based show also set in New York.
In New York?
That we have done for the podcast.
Oh. No, I can't think.
Fame.
Oh, of course, yeah. I mean, that was much earlier.
Was it?
Yeah, that was in the 80s, 70s, 80s.
Okay, because I found it interesting that half the cast in that are black.
Yes.
And in the episodes that I watched, none of the cast are anything but very white.
Yes. Yes, true. Yeah.
So I have all sorts of bits and pieces. Where do we where do you want to go?
Oh, as I suppose I said, I it kind of depends on how many embarrassing teenage confessions you want from me.
So I have a little bit of meta stuff. I have some stuff about the style, and then when I said I have lots of other bits and pieces, it's actually all broken down now that I look at my notes by person.
Okay.
So, shall I just do the little bit of meta stuff?
Go for it.
So, appealing to your audience, the type of person who feels that their life was all planned out in incredible detail and instead they've managed to break away from that to go off and be the chosen one, to go off and, you know, do something different in a way that's entirely supported by your parents giving lots of money.
Yes. Yes.
Does, I think, appeal to a certain type of viewer who feels that they're in a bit of a treadmill of how their life is going to
absolutely kind of go. I mean, as I say, I related very strongly to Felicity as a character. And I mean, I must say that I have no regrets about my university experience. I really enjoyed the place that I went and I made some really fantastic friends and I enjoyed my studies and it was great. But there were other things that I might have wanted to do, but it just was kind of like, you know, I knew what was expected and it didn't occur to me to suggest otherwise, really.
Mm.
But I'm not blaming anybody for that at all. And I, as I say, I'm perfectly happy with where I ended up. So, but yeah.
They didn't half speed run the first episode.
Yes, I thought that watching two episodes we might not get much, and you know, that so much happened.
So I assume that the first episode was a pilot, so they wanted to get as much through it as possible in order to get money from the network. So Felicity follows this guy Ben to
it's New even York. You know, it's not even as I mean, that doesn't sound sensible, but it's not even as sensible as that. She's kind of had a crush on him from afar during high school, and then
for 4 years, and despite being a young, spunky woman, you know, she's never, who's like, you know, obviously, you know, really high grades and does all this stuff. She's never actually, and it's obviously very outgoing and personable and self-confident, and has never spoken to this person she's had a crush on in 4 years. And I'm like,
yeah,
really?
So she goes up to him at graduation and asks him to sign her yearbook, and he writes this incredibly long, I mean, there's never really an explanation of why this happens.
Uh-huh.
He writes this incredibly long entry talking about how he's watched her from afar for 4 years and always wondered what she was thinking about and never took the opportunity to get to know her. And she decides this means that there is a future for them, and so she asks him where he's going to university, and then follows him across the country.
Which does, of course, make you wonder how many times he wrote exactly the same thing in that yearbook for other girls that were in.
That's a good question, isn't it? Yes,
it's a miracle he wasn't followed to college by, you know, half a dozen different
girls. Yeah, I mean, it's basically the premise of Legally Blonde, only Legally Blonde does it in a much more amusing fashion.
Mm.
Yes, I had a crush on someone from afar, who was in the orchestra for the musical when we did Iolanthe, and I was in the chorus, and I lusted after him all through rehearsals and performances. And then he wrote me a Christmas card with a very heartfelt message in it that sent me a bit loopy. And I, as a confirmed atheist, joined the Christian Union because that was what he did.
Okay.
So it wasn't quite the same as moving across the country to go to college in a different city, but I did join the Christian Union because I had a crush on someone that I thought possibly liked me back because of something random he wrote in a Christmas card. So, as I said, marked similarities to a certain extent.
But so in the first episode, graduation, this whole thing with the yearbook, she moves to New York, she has a whole conversation with him in which she says, "You made me fall in love with you," which made me want to burn everything.
Because I don't think you could really justifiably accuse him of that.
I don't. Well, it's not a thing that you can do to other people.
Well, also
anyway.
True.
You're laying your own weird blame thing, you strange young woman. Yeah, so she confronts him and he says, "What?
What are you talking about?
Basically.
Who even are you?"
Yes, she says, I've got in my notes somewhere, 10 minutes into the show, apparently he's got a different girlfriend and has forgotten who she is.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it has been like the entire summer in between, and they were never friends.
We will come back to the time gap later on. So, and then the other thing I've got written under, like, meta stuff is just all tropes all the time.
Well, sure.
It's very... I found it interesting to think about, at the same time as you've got this, and you've got Dawson's Creek and Party 5 and lots of other kind of teenager melodrama shows. Do you want to know what else was contemporary with this?
Oh, go on.
Buffy.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah, it would have been.
Which
because I didn't watch Buffy at the time, so
oh,
I don't
really
associate it. Yeah, I only watched Buffy after I met you.
Oh, wow.
You lent me the box set.
Mm. So, obviously that is in some ways a teenage melodrama show.
Yes.
But with an extremely strong female lead.
Yeah.
And with characters that, and listeners may well totally disagree with me on this, don't seem to be as nearly either, I was going to say, up themselves or wacky. But I think in both cases that's not true though,
no,
is it?
No, that is not true.
Okay, fair
you
enough.
You are wrong.
I am wrong, yes.
Okay.
What would you like to talk about now?
See, normally you just carry on and I don't have to think about that. I just respond.
I thought I'd let you get a word in edgeways.
Oh, I was unprepared. I mean, it is so, so 90s with kind of like the soft focus and the angsty navel gazing. There's a massive voiceover gimmick whereby Felicity is sending recorded letters to her old French teacher on cassette. Yeah.
Which
you get to have her narrating the episodes in a massively unneeded fashion.
Which I did to my granny in the
1980s. Oh, did you?
I used
that's
to send
very
her cassettes.
Sweet.
Yes.
I had a recorded diary because I got a dictaphone for my 13th birthday.
God, where are those recordings now?
I think there are a couple of surviving cassettes somewhere deep in a cupboard.
Wow.
But yes, definitely don't want to revisit that.
It was interesting when you catch things which suddenly make you go, oh yeah, this is some time ago. Because so much of it could be contemporary.
Yeah.
But there's a bit at the start of the second episode where she's talking about, so her parents have gone back to California, which makes no sense because then they turn up later in the episode.
Yeah, well, they haven't actually gone home.
But you see them at the start of the episode. You see her at the start of the episode calling them on a payphone, which is what I was going to say about it being in the 90s. She says, you know, I call them every so often, and then there's a shot of her using a payphone, and then
true.
It turns out that her parents haven't actually gone home, so...
That is confusing.
That is confusing.
Yeah, okay.
But in terms of the style stuff, you don't really get the proper credits until the second episode, when the credits are in black and white, in a very, you know, we're trying to be stylish,
sort of like slightly out of focus action shots of the actors and the characters, rather than it being very clear who anybody is.
There's some slow-mo bits when it tries to do stuff for effect in the first episode, which I thought were kind of odd.
Don't remember that.
And the music is very, very bland in the background, apart from in the first episode.
Oh, how can you call Paula Cole bland?
Apart from some bits in the first episode where they have some rock bits, and they have a bit of Paula Cole, but they also, I was incredibly impressed to notice that they did a song by a band called Transistor, who I really, really like, who are a small band from Brighton who are only around for about 18 months, released 2 albums. The track that was on there wasn't even one of the singles, and I managed to recognise it anyway. And somehow J.J. Abrams has spotted this band from the UK in Brighton that was hardly around for any period of time and decided to stick this track in one of his shows.
Yeah.
And I was just like, wow, that's so cool.
That is pretty cool.
So, yeah. Should we talk about her?
What, Felicity?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because towards the end of the second episode, I wrote this whole section in my notes that said, Felicity interacting with Ben is all about Felicity. Felicity interacting with her parents is all about Felicity. Felicity interacting with Julie is all about Felicity. Felicity interacting with Noel is all about Felicity. Felicity in her letters to Sally, her French tutor, who has this tragic backstory and is trying to put her life back together, is also all about Felicity. But then towards the end of the second episode, we actually got quite a heartfelt conversation between Felicity and Julie, where we got a whole load of emotional stuff about Julie that Felicity was in fact quite
briefly
interested in. And then there was a heartfelt conversation between Felicity and her mum, where her mum revealed a whole load of stuff about her emotional background that Felicity was very interested in, and I had to cross it all out. But up until that point, it had been, you know, all Felicity all the time. But then that is the name of the show.
So the only things that I have in bold on my notes are the "you made me fall in love with you," which most maybe want to burn everything. And then a note to say, brave choice to make your principal character in a pilot deeply unlikable.
Yes, yes. She is very painfully, painfully painful.
Second episode maybe slightly better, but you've made a pilot episode in which your principal character is just doesn't seem to really have any redeeming features.
No, it is true.
Which is an interesting choice.
It's not ideal.
So, stuff that I've written down. I don't know how old the actress is, but she does come over as being very young.
She does, yeah.
And I found it... I keep saying I found it interesting, but anyway. I found it interesting trying to put myself in her shoes. There's a bit in episode 2 where she talks about New York being really scary, and I'm like, is it? And I'm thinking that if you turned up effectively on your own at 18,
yeah,
it probably would be really scary. I mean, I wasn't, you know... I've found university a great opportunity to, like, open up and do new things and meet new people, and I was really enthused by it. But I guess in a lot of cases it can be kind of scary and traumatic going to you know, other places and doing different things.
Yeah, I would say so.
She says, I dropped everything for a boy I didn't even know. Maybe it will save my life.
What?
In the first episode, that's what she says.
Okay, that's
some point
weird
in time near the end, it's just, yep.
I mean,
melodrama.
To a certain extent, she doesn't really follow through on the whole Ben thing for very long. Although it does kind of go slightly back and forth.
Oh, really? Because one of the things that I wrote down under, I think under Ben, was the simmering sexual tension between her and Ben in the show is so dull. It's so boring.
It is pretty boring.
It's such a trope. And he, bless him, he hardly speaks. He has so little dialogue in the episodes.
He's very, very punchable, though.
I mean, yes and no.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, yes, he's moderately punchable, but the thing is, he's not nearly as punchable as other characters.
Well, we might end up disagreeing on that one. Mm. I was going to say that...
Before we started recording, I said we disagree about something, and that's...
Oh, was that it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I think the most incredibly painful bit is that the second episode opens with Felicity dictating a message to Sally about how totally over Ben she and Julie both are, because Julie has a very brief thing with Ben in the first episode. and it's over the top of a shot of them both standing in the hallway, mm-hmm. and Julie standing behind Felicity, mm-hmm. and they're both looking down the hallway to where mm-hmm. Ben is, with ridiculous puppy dog expressions yeah. on their faces, and I that was when I wanted to burn everything.
Yeah.
So 100%, it was yeah. kind of weird, because when I was saying that, you know, it is so incredibly real world, it does have aspects that are incredibly realistic in the how painful and awkward it all is and that kind of thing. But then there are also these intermittent moments where people have these incredibly emotionally honest conversations in ways that people would never do.
Yep.
When she goes up to him and tells him why she yes. came.
Yep.
And about the effect of what he wrote in the book. Well, this and then the when whole she thing asks about Noel,
speed running the pilot episode. Yeah. Because all of this happens in the pilot episode.
Yeah.
And often you think that wouldn't happen until sometime three quarters of the way through the season.
You would think. And then she asks Noel straight out, do you have feelings for me? And he says yes.
You have to explain.
Like, what?
You have to explain who Noel is.
Noel is the resident advisor on her dorm floor. So he is a sophomore, so he's in his second year, and he's been appointed to kind of look after the first years, the freshmen,
yeah.
and make sure that they're okay.
He's paid to basically be the person in the building that they can go and talk to. Did you have those at your university?
Yes, sort of. Yes, we had someone, there was someone on our staircase who was like the older student staircase person. And I don't remember that being his role. I remember his role being more sort of policing us
yeah.
than supporting us.
Yeah.
Because I remember I had my birthday fairly early on in my first term at university, and I deliberately invited him to my party mm-hmm. so that he wouldn't then be mm-hmm. available to be complained to mm-hmm. if anybody got annoyed with us playing really loud music, and it worked. But so, he was very sweet, but I don't remember him being someone that we were meant to be. You know, we were actually assigned older students to be like buddies.
Yes, I remember you saying
but
that.
But it was like a one-on-one individual yeah. thing.
So we didn't have that, but most of the accommodation in my university was in 20-storey tower blocks, and there were people on the 20th floor who allegedly you could go up and ask for help about stuff. And the only time we ever saw them is when somebody set something on fire or was being really, really overly incredibly loud at 3 a.m. and they would come down and do them in some way.
Yeah.
But otherwise, never. They certainly weren't somebody you could go and... The idea of the RA being a role where you knock on the door and go, can you be my personal therapist, this person that you've only known for 5 minutes, is I'm just going to tell you all about my home life and this boy. And if I'd been Noel, I'd have been like, what are you even doing?
Yes, and because of that... That kind of dynamic between them.
Oh.
Yes. Oh. You know, even if he did have an immediate, instant crush on her for whatever mm-hmm. reason, he certainly shouldn't tell her about it.
So we'll come to Noel, believe me. I'm still doing Felicity. So she has this whole thing where she says to Ben, I had this whole crush on you, which is why I came to New York, but now I've gone over myself, because that's the thing that happens. And then she says, so can we be friends? And I wanted him to say, no, obviously because you need therapy, and the last thing you should do is be around me in any way at all.
Yes.
And instead he goes, yes, sure. And flutters his eyelashes at her yeah. and wanders off.
Yeah.
So...
And then hits on her friend.
So... Some of the plot is driven by the fact that in order to get enough money to pay for accommodation, because her parents aren't going to pay for it, she goes to work in the student office where she has access to the transcripts.
Uh-huh.
So one of the first things she does is she gets hold of Ben's transcript, which she then photocopies. His
application essay.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which she then photocopies and, you know, takes away, which you would be immediately and expelled. And
gives to Noel to read.
Immediately expelled
she
for.
She turns up and goes, is it really bad that I read Ben's application essay? And he goes, well, yes. And she was like, you read Ben's application essay. And he does. And I'm like,
They're all expelled.
Yeah.
So we'll come to what that says, but just the fact that she's, you know, happy to do that kind of thing is a thing. It comes out in the second episode that in her application essay, it doesn't say in what manner, but it says that she wrote about Ben.
Yes, well, there was a massive... I have massive issues with this because, first of all, NYU is not going to accept somebody who talks about a crush they had in high school
yes.
that influenced their decision as
yes.
to wanting to go
yes.
to the university in the first place.
100%.
But the other thing is, it's impossible for that to be true, because by the time she's got to high school graduation, she must have already applied to all of these places.
Yeah.
And we know she previously applied to NYU, because when
we?
She decides she's going to switch, she goes back to her paperwork and she finds the acceptance letter from NYU and then calls them and says, actually, I've changed my mind. Can I take up the place? So, yes, she wrote the essay months before this whole episode of even... So, unless she was talking about him in terms of, there's this really cute boy I like, but this has nothing to do with my university application, it didn't make any sense.
Yes. So, two or three more things. She has quite a good relationship with her student counsellor.
Yes.
Who's the only... non-white character of the show that
in
I've
the
seen.
First two episodes,
first
correct,
episodes.
Yes.
And it kind of highlights the conversation she has with him and the conversation she has with Noel, that she doesn't really have any friends at college, maybe Julie, but, and this always seems to happen in television shows, doesn't have any friends at home. So there was...
that's a good point, apart from Sally.
Yeah, so there were no... Who's much...
French tutor.
Yes. So it's
that is a very good point.
It's so often the way to make writing of the show easier that characters arrive tabula rasa with no history essentially, and then
they don't meet that many people because
yeah.
you can only have a certain number
yeah.
of characters, yeah. And apart from Elena and Greg. Oh no, and Javier. So no, there are quite a few. It does broaden out.
Yeah, okay. I do not know these people are.
Sorry. Elena is her lab partner, who is the female black student who is in it a lot.
Being in a lab.
No, exactly. And Greg is this random, weird, older guy who has a flat that some of them live in from time to time at various different points, and he seems to make his money from weird inventions that he creates, and I don't really know. And Javier is the manager at one of the massively iconic things about Felicity, which again is not in the first two episodes, is that she and Ben go and work in a coffee shop called Dean and DeLuca, which is a real place.
Hmm.
I've been there. I went to one in New York. It's a chain of coffee shops.
I've the one in New York, I'm sure.
Yeah, we went in because I was like, oh my God, it's where Felicity works.
Okay.
Yeah, so she and Ben work there, and Javier is the manager. And that's quite a central location, a bit like with Friends.
Mm-hmm.
People kind of like hang out at the Dean and DeLuca.
The only thing I've got under Felicity in particular was a quote somewhere near the end of episode two where she's talking to Julie and she says, "Oh God, I feel so grown up." And Julie goes, "Me too." And
yeah,
it's just
it was
like,
a bit cringeworthy,
oh,
indeed.
Oh dear. But, you know, they are, I guess, kind of, I'm going to say kind of sweet, but no, I'm struggling. Should we do Ben briefly? Ben looks 35.
Yes, Ben does look 35, it's true. And I also find him very punchable.
Do go on.
He's just like very, I don't know, cookie cutter blonde.
He's extremely non-existent in terms of character depth.
No, and he's like, I mean, admittedly, he had no idea what effect what he wrote in her yearbook was, but it was still a bit weird. And then he doesn't necessarily deal with it all that well. And then there's the whole thing where he goes out with her and Julie, and when Julie goes to the bathroom, he's like, oh, you know, would you be okay if I asked her out? And I'm like, well, it's all very fast for, like, getting over all of this kind of stuff. I don't know. He's just, as you say, he's kind of like a combination of punchable and nothingy, really.
Except for... There is only one characteristic that Ben is given at all that isn't just transparent good shampoo advert.
Yes, he is very good shampoo advert, yes.
Potential love interest, which is his application essay.
Oh, where he talks about having had an older brother who died of brain cancer, and that he feels now that he is older than his brother ever was, as if his everything that he does is kind of almost on behalf of his brother to live the life that his brother never had. And
except
then it turns out that he'd never had a brother.
He made it all up.
Which
makes him a frankly absolutely disgusting disgusting character.
Yeah, well, he does say that when he tells Felicity this, so mm-hmm. I was quite impressed with him in that conversation, actually. This was another one of those conversations where I was like, this would never happen. But I was actually quite impressed with him. So yes, that is appalling and terrible, and he should never have got his place and also needs to be expelled. But he does admit to Felicity that he lied
mm-hmm.
because he feels bad that she's kind of got this impression of him and his tragic backstory.
He doesn't feel and he bad says that he's kept somebody else from going.
He feels like a shallow loser. So there is some self-awareness there. Ben does grow to a certain extent over the course of the four seasons, as far as I remember. But I don't really remember that much about him.
It's interesting you're saying about self-awareness. There's a line that Felicity uses at some point, I forget, in one of the episodes, where she says, oh, I'm a terrible human being. And it just made me reflect on the fact that the vast majority of times that people use that phrase, what they mean is, feel sorry for me.
I want you to tell me that's not true.
I want you to give me sympathy and tell me that I'm a good person.
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So.
But no, I had a little tiny bit of respect for him in that moment, but not a lot.
Should we move on to Noel?
Noel. I remember absolutely loving Noel. Noel was my guy. I don't feel like he is very well represented in these two episodes, but I also related very hard to him because we learn that he has a crush on Felicity and she keeps coming to him to talk about her issues with Ben. And when I was in sixth form, one of my best friends I was desperately in love with was dating one of my other friends, and there were a lot of issues in their relationship. And I understood where the issues were coming from because she had confided in me about certain things that I could not tell him. And he would come to me and express his issues with what was going on with his girlfriend. And I would sit there going, why don't you love me?
People.
Yes. So.
Son of a bridge, should be.
Yes, absolutely. So, yes. That was another thing that had parallels that I related very strongly to. But yeah, Noel doesn't come across particularly well in these two episodes because he tells the new freshman, who is being very vulnerable and upset about certain aspects of her life circumstances, that he has feelings for her. And then when her parents are coming to visit, he utters the phrase, I can't wait to meet the people who made you.
Ew! I literally went, ew,
yes,
really
did.
Loud while I was watching that.
I mean, that is so creepy.
So let's take a step back just for a second.
Sorry.
So, no, it's all good. There are certain types of characters in modern media. I'm sure on TV Tropes there are types that cover people like Noel and to some extent Julie.
Oh, absolutely.
Noel is, I mean, the main connection that came to me is Wash from Firefly, but there are also, for me, I can very, very quickly pick up in a show the characters that are designed for me to like. So Willow from Buffy, Kelly from Firefly, the kind of female, slightly quirky, often, you know, have some kind of speciality that they're good at, kind of not the main female lead, but etc.
Yeah.
Those are the characters that are kind of designed for people like me, like that kind of thing.
Yes.
And
floppy-haired, puppy-dog eyes, unrequited love boy,
yes,
is designed for me.
Yes. So I immediately can see what they're trying to put Noel into. They're trying to make him adorable.
Yes.
He is... Can we swear in this episode?
If you wanna.
He is creepy as fuck. He is so...
yeah, it needs...
So
yes.
Creepy. Like, everything he does in these two episodes is incredibly creepy.
Even given the very first time, you know, he opens his door and appears on screen, my entire heart, you know, grew two sizes.
Mm-hmm.
My entire being went, oh, it's Noel. By the end of the two episodes, I was like, he is creepy as fuck.
Yes. So my notes are not in a very good order. But some of the things about Noel, he self-describes himself in the first episode as being a geek, which I did not like.
Why?
Because I think it's the writers trying to send some kind of, you know, coded message to the kind of people who are watching the show to, again, you know, this is one of you, this is why you should like this person.
Okay.
So there was that. There was the bit in the first episode where I can't remember, I didn't write down what it was, but he bought her something?
No idea.
And there, you know, again, he's her RA, so he's in a slight position of authority, and he only known her for 5 minutes. When she says, "Do you have feelings for me?" and he says, "Yes," is one thing, but then in the next episode, he says, "Actually, don't worry, I have crushes on all sorts of people all the time. I'm a sensitive guy."
Yeah, that was pretty awful.
Just so, so terrible. And then he says, "The thing when I said I had feelings for you, I guess it was just some kind of power trip thing."
Yes, well, I mean, Noel is painful awkwardness personified, which is not that great.
He has a giant American flag in his room.
Oh, really? I didn't even notice
that.
Yeah,
it's on the wall in the second episode. So that was the thing. I really wanted to like him because he's obviously written to a trope that is the kind of character that I would normally really like. I don't normally like the primary leads.
Yes.
I normally like the secondary characters. And I just wrote down that he's just so desperate and whiny.
Yeah. Well, I agree. And it was very sad because I remembered him being, you know, my guy that I was absolutely desperate about when I watched it before.
And then he has a conversation with her parents towards the end of episode 2 where he says, "Don't worry, I'm looking out for her."
Yeah, and if I was her dad, I'd be like, "Felicity, you're coming home with us immediately. I'm not leaving you in the vicinity of this creepy-ass guy."
Yeah. So, do you know what being a white knight or white knighting is?
Yeah.
Do you want to explain to the audience?
Well, I'm assuming you mean that it's someone who likes to save young women from situations.
Yeah. I mean, essentially what it means is being the kind of man who, consciously or unconsciously, seeks out women who are troubled in some way and then has positive feelings about themselves by the fact that they are saving this person from their situation.
Yeah.
And I spent about a decade doing that without realizing that I was doing it. Pretty much all of my 20s I spent doing that over and over again with different women until I realized what I was doing and went, what are you doing, you terrible creepy man? And I made a conscious effort to stop. But so,
well done you.
Yes, so I know very much,
because you certainly didn't do that with me.
No, absolutely not. But I know,
and look where we ended up.
Well, yes indeed. So I know very much what that's like, but it doesn't make it a good thing in any way at all.
No.
Right, Julie isn't in it very much?
No, I mean, she is one of the main characters as things go on. I mean, nobody really gets much of a look in other than Felicity in this first couple of episodes. Mm. As I say, I mean, that is the name of the show. So Julie is quite sweet.
How do we meet her? Because I really, really like that a lot.
I don't even know. I don't remember.
The two, her and Felicity, are in a class, and Felicity's obviously looking upset. And
Felicity's crying, and Julie writes her a little note saying, "Are you okay?"
And she says two options, which are no and I will be.
Which is very sweet.
I really like that very much indeed.
Yeah.
So
yes. Yeah, Julie is very sweet. Mm. And we do get more. It's a bit of a, you know, info dump moment when she reveals that she was adopted and that the reason that she came to New York was because she discovered that it's where her birth mother lives.
Mm.
And that obviously is an arc for her. But it was kind of crowbarred into the second episode in quite a expositionary way.
You should never look up what happens to characters.
Why?
Because Julie has a nervous breakdown and leaves New York partway through this show.
Oh, I don't remember that.
Mm.
Oh, that's very sad.
Yes.
Noel gets married.
Well,
sort of.
I asked ChatGPT about Noel, and Noel is confusing, which we'll get to when we get to the end. So, other characters, briefly, the student counsellor seems really good. He's not in it very much.
No.
I really wanted him to say, "Dear God, can we just get over your privilege, please?" When her parents are there, he essentially runs a family counselling session with her parents and her. And I'm like, I do not think that is the thing the student council would do. Maybe he would. I don't know. But it seems
very
weird.
Don't really know.
Which moves us on to her parents.
Okay. What about them?
What would you say about them?
They are fairly typical. They want what they think is best for her. They've had a reasonably good relationship over time. They have not been aware that there's been any issues. They think that, you know, she has been fully involved in the decisions that have been made. So they're not terrible people. And when she suddenly up sticks and goes, I'm going to New York and giving up my dreams of being a doctor, they're, you know, understandably confused and upset. They don't necessarily deal with it particularly well, but they come round in the end. So I, you know, didn't have that much of an issue with them. I think I probably understand them better now than I probably did at the time.
So the first thing that I would say is that they do a lot of...
They don't forbid her from going.
Well, they can't. She's an adult.
True, but they can try more than they do.
So there's a bunch of, you know, emotionally mature conversations in the second episode in ways that, I was going to say, don't happen in the real world, but certainly don't happen between British parents and children in the real world. I don't know, but I can't talk about Americans. However, time jump.
Okay.
So there's a gap between when she's still at home and says, I'm not going to go to Stanford, I'm going to go to do medicine, I'm going to go to New York and do, I don't even know.
Yeah.
During which time... she has a few weeks at home, and then they have to box up all her stuff, and then they have to move her to New York and leave her there. And the conversations about what are you doing, and about the money, and about all this stuff, which we see on the show after she's been in New York for a few weeks, apparently haven't happened during all of that time.
That is true.
Which doesn't make any sense. If her parents are going to have a meltdown, they're going to have a meltdown the immediate time that she says, I'm not going to go to Stanford.
Yeah, that's not an unreasonable point. It's a bit like the application essay.
Yes.
Yeah.
So there's that. There's a bit in the second episode where they say, we never laid down an ultimatum of where we thought you were going to go to college, except in the first episode, her parents specifically say, if you don't go to Stanford, we're not going to fund your education.
Yeah.
And threaten to cut all the money off. Which is an ultimation.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
We do get quite a heartfelt moment with her mum, because her mum has a bit of a flip out and kind of flounces off. And
in the second episode,
says that she shouldn't bother, if she likes it so much in New York, she shouldn't bother coming home for Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
And Felicity is understandably very upset, because this is not the sort of thing that she expects from her mum. And then her mum comes to find her and explains that, you know, she has some, well, not regrets as such. It's one of those incredibly awkward conversations where the parent says, you know, she says, I had you when I was 20. And don't get me wrong, it's amazing and I love you and you're the best thing that's ever happened to me. But...
And also, we've...
There are things that I could have done with my life had that not happened.
And also, we've never had this conversation before.
Also a bit weird. But the thing is that I think it was done quite well. And I felt for her mum in that moment. I thought I understood it.
Her mum's only 38.
Yeah. And also that if she... Because she said that, you know, she met Felicity's dad at college, and then she had a baby in her second year, and then presumably dropped out.
I mean that is my reading.
Anyway,
so my there's nothing about this in the show.
Yeah,
but my reading is that Felicity's mum got accidentally pregnant while at university, and then dropped out, and has spent the last 18 years trying not to feel bitter about it.
Yeah, but then I'm not quite sure how. I think they probably must have had rich parents who helped them out, because that was when her. Subsequent husband would have been in his sort of second or maybe third year of his first degree, and then he did a medical degree, and all of this time they had a baby, and what were they living on? And anyway, but that's beside the point. But I thought it was quite a well done scene. I thought it gave the mom some layers. I thought she was presented quite well in understanding her motivations and why she behaved the way she did. And then they kind of ruined it a little bit, because Ben comes up to talk to Felicity. And then Felicity says, oh, Mum, this is Ben. And she's already explained who Ben is. And then he walks off down the corridor and both of them stare after him. And the mum goes, he's really cute. And then they both look at him, at his arse as he's walking away. And I'm like, oh, my God. And now it's incredibly creepy again.
So before we get into the thing I was going to do next, which is basically leap to the end.
Okay.
And talk about Noel's wedding and stuff that happened at the end of the show, because I obviously haven't seen this, because I've only watched two episodes, but I have asked
it all up
asked the internet what happens.
Okay.
It's worse than that.
Oh, you asked ChatGPT.
I asked ChatGPT what happened. So it may be entirely hallucinated.
Well, quite possibly.
But the important question is, do you have anything else you want to talk about before I leap to the end?
I just wanted to mention Megan, because Megan is Felicity's roommate. And in the, again, much like Elena, not quite as bad because she is actually in it very briefly. All that happens with Megan is we see her sort of storming in occasionally, getting things out of the wardrobe and then storming out again without saying anything.
She doesn't, she's sharing a room with Felicity, but she doesn't sleep there.
Yeah, she is interesting.
Do we find out where she sleeps?
I'm assuming so, because again, she is a main character.
And she's a freshman.
Yes.
So to turn up at university and then not sleep
in your room, it is a bit weird, yeah. But I remember really liking Megan as a character, and she doesn't get really anything of a showing other than being very brusque and quite scary.
Rude
in the first couple of episodes. But she is another one who becomes a main character, because you only have a certain small number of people in the show, and comes into her own a bit more.
Right. Shall I read what ChatGPT wrote about the ending?
Go for it.
Right. The television series Felicity concludes with a unique blend of reality and surrealism. Initially, the series final centres on Felicity's return to New York for Noel's wedding. During this time, her friend Megan performs a magic spell that allows Felicity to travel back in time, enabling her to reconsider her past life choices.
What?
In this altered timeline, significant events unfold. Felicity and Ben's relationship faces challenges. Noel tragically dies in a fire.
What?
And Elaine dies in a car accident. Distressed by these outcomes, Felicity seeks to reverse the magic spell. She consults the spell's creator, who helps her return to the present. But upon awakening, Felicity discovers that her time travel experiences were actually the result of a high fever-induced delusion.
Wait. I don't remember that at all.
The series concludes with Noel's wedding proceeding as planned and Felicity reconciling with Ben.
Okay, that's very confusing, because what I read in Wikipedia was that everybody persuaded Noel that his marriage was a terrible idea and he got the wedding annulled. And I thought that he and Felicity got together, but I'm probably misremembering.
What, Felicity and Noel?
Yeah, I don't know. Evidently, who knows? Who knows? I don't think anybody knows. Well, and I'm not going to watch it to find out. So, was that your lot?
Before diversity data, yes.
Okay. So, we've pretty much done the diversity. In the first two episodes, the only non-white character... Oh, no, because there's the other freshman, the Asian guy, who comes to Noel's door to complain about his roommate having dreams where he says he's going to get knives and stab his roommate. Yeah. So, he's a non-white character, very briefly. But otherwise, it's just the student counsellor. But then, as I said, Elena turns up in episode 3 and is a main character throughout the rest of the show.
Mm-hmm.
And Javier also is... He is Spanish. He's from Spain, not from South America.
Oh,
but he has a very strong accent, and he's also gay.
Okay.
As is Noel's brother.
Gender. Mrs. Jessup.
Who?
Mrs. Jessup is the person who runs the student office where Felicity works.
Oh.
And she says... On finding out that someone had called the office to ask if they could read Felicity's application essay, which drives a lot of the plot of the second episode, because she thinks it's Ben, but then it's not. It turns out it's her parents who are trying to find out what she wrote and why she went, which of course is a conversation they would have had before she'd gone.
And also wouldn't have, and would have been written before she made the decision that she was going to go anyway.
Yeah. But Mrs. Jessup apparently says to Felicity, it must be nice to have an admirer.
Okay.
Not certainly what these days we would say is a stalker who is phoning up and asking for your college essays. So we've got some, you know, problematic gender tropes going on, to say the least.
But aside from that, I mean, you've got quite a range of very different, quite interesting layered female characters, and they're not all showcased in the first couple of episodes. We've got Felicity herself, who is obviously quite emotionally complex, and her mum, who gets a certain amount of depth. Julie has quite a strong arc, and Elena when she comes into it, and Megan develops as well. So, you know, it's not terrible in terms of that.
So I briefly want to touch on mental health. So I can't remember which character it was, but somebody in the first episode says, "My roommate is terrible. They clean everything all the time. She wears a face mask whenever she goes out. Oh, that's crazy. What kind of person would do that?"
Yes, which is quite interesting post-pandemic.
Yeah. Well, yes.
But also not that great in terms of potential mental health representation.
Yep. We also have the bit that you just mentioned about the guy who keeps interrupting the conversation with Noel, and we get Noel having a conversation with that guy's roommate saying, "You're not going to stab this guy, are you?" And the guy going, "No, I'm not going to stab him," in an obviously meant to be humorous kind of way.
Yeah, that wasn't
so
great.
Not great depiction of that. So yeah,
true.
Mental health stuff not fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I think I'm done.
Okay, so that about wraps it up for this month's discussion. So it's time for the ratings. We use a standard 5-star rating system with half stars allowed. Dave, what is your rating for the first 2 episodes of Felicity?
I'm going to give it 2.5 because it's profoundly mediocre.
Okay, fair.
It's not bad. There's some bits in it that are bad. Not making your principal character particularly likeable is not great.
Mm.
But it's really not bad. But it's just, you know, I feel mean saying this for your choice, but it's just very, very not special.
Oh, sure. No, I 100% agree.
So,
I mean, I think I would go further. I thought it was actually pretty terrible, and
really
going to give it 2.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I kind of went into it. I'm kind of preempting the next question, so do you want to ask the next question?
Did you really love it again?
No, and I was a bit disappointed because I had remembered some of the characters that I liked and certain aspects of it that I liked, and I thought maybe it would be something that I would rewatch.
Mm.
And having watched the first 2 episodes and remembered things that happened towards the end, I'm like, no.
Okay.
No, do not want to really revisit it, sadly.
Right.
So what are we going to do next month?
So having had a real-world, fairly sedate, mostly sitting around talking about your emotions...
Navel-gazing,
multi-person thing for TV series,
uh-huh,
this episode, we're going for an action-packed science fiction film for the next setting, which I still don't believe I made you watch this because it was my favourite film for a long time, which is Catherine Bigelow's Strange Days.
I have seen it,
but
I don't really remember anything about it.
Okay.
And I was expecting it to come up at some point, and I'm very happy to watch it again.
Cool. It was my favourite film for like 15 years until like The Martian came out, and it's pretty much just been my favourite film ever since.
Okay.
So.
Yeah. No, I shall look forward to that.
Cool. So that's this month's episode of Bruce Will Love It Tomorrow. Many thanks to Cambo for our theme music, and thank you so much for listening. Remember that if you like the show, you can rate and review it everywhere you get your podcasts.
And if you have any comments, or if you want to tell us about a time you shared some media you love and whether or not you still loved it afterwards, you can email us at willyoustilloveit@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you.
And remember, you can buy our merch at bit.ly/loveittomorrowpodcast with hyphens where the spaces would be.
I'm sitting on a Will You Still Love It Tomorrow cushion right now.
Ooh.
And it is very comfy.
Hey. You can follow us on Blue Sky at stillloveit with dashes where the spaces would be .bsky.social.
And please join us next month to find out what I think of Strange Days and whether Dave still loves it after our discussion.
Okay, bye for now.
Bye-bye.